If you are a marketing enthusiast and you wish to learn the tricks up the sleeves of seasoned marketeers, you are at the right place. I am your host, Nishant Goyal, and this is the Marketing Chakravyuh podcast, where I invite accomplished marketeers from around the world and pick on their brain, asking questions that would help you understand the mystery of marketing and grow yourself to heights. Whether you are a student, entrepreneur, or a marketer yourself, this is where you can learn the untold secrets of marketing from the people you admire and love. Our today's guest, Gully, aka Miguel Hampton, is a photographer, audio expert, podcaster, streamer, gamer, and a marketer. Yes, he does all of it. And in today's episode, we will have a conversation around his area of expertise, promotional products in marketing. So let's get started. Hi, Miguel. Welcome to the Marketing Podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. So, Miguel, since you have quite a lot of experience in marketing and allied fields, the first question that comes to my mind is, what brought you into marketing? What was the reason or what was the instance when you thought that, okay, I should get into marketing? This is something I will really enjoy working with or working in.
Man, I got into marketing, honestly. I was in fashion retail for a while, and actually has to go back to when I was an undergrad. I'm a business management major, and one of my marketing professors was like, dude, you're totally in the wrong field. You should be studying marketing. And I was like, nah, never. But long story short, I ended up getting into fashion retail and running a certain levels of retail stores throughout the Midwest and the United States, the Great Plains, and then on the East Coast. And oddly enough, you know, ripping and running across the country, the company that I worked for went out of business. I ended up moving to an area called Jeffersonville, Indiana, which is right outside of Louisville, Kentucky, and started working for a promotional marketing firm. And that's how I got in there. But I mean, truth be told, I'd always been in marketing. You know, retail is nothing but marketing. I owned a small record label and did management for a little while as well. And so that's all about marketing strategy and building relationships.
Wow. So marketing strategy is something you really worked in, and I believe you also enjoy now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely enjoy it all day long. All day long.
Wow. So how do you go about when you have a product you have to build a strategy for? What is your first instinct to look at, or what is the first thought that comes across your mind when you have a product you have to build a marketing strategy for?
You know, I guess really is who I want to market the product to. That's super important. Who we want to market the product to, you know, the cost and value to make and create the product and then put it in the market space, you know, how the product is going to be used. I mean, so there's a lot to think about when you go through that process. But for the most part is, you know, can we sell the product, you know, and where are we going to sell it at? Where our distribution points are, you know, where our retail points are.
So how do you go about it? How do you choose your target audience then? Assuming that the product does not have very well-defined target audience, that maybe something that is very specific for toddlers, then you know that, okay, this is designed for toddlers. But if there is a product that can be used amongst various segments, and you would you do research, or would you go out, ask people directly, or would you just, you know, shadow people and try to observe patterns? I know it's a bit vague question. It would depend on situations. But what is your first instinct around these?
Well, I think it's product specific. So to give you an example, one of the products we used to own, it was called Sancho Miguel Salsa. We made our own product. It was an edible sauce, right? And so when we went out and started doing the research before we brought it to market, we did two things. First, we looked at how many people in the geographic area that we wanted to sell product in was eating a condiment or salsa or a relish or something in that nature, right? And so we found where that audience was. Then we wanted to identify where they were shopping at, right? Were they shopping in a grocery store? Were they going to farmers markets? Then we wanted to look at how often that particular customer purchased, right? Is it something that they buy once a week? Is it something that they buy once a month? And then what are the comparable products that sell in that space? So to give you an example, ketchup, right? Everybody knows what ketchup is. You put it on your French fries, your burgers, your eggs, your whatever you put it on. So what we started doing was researching how often ketchup and mustard, things like that, sold. And we realized that salsa in the community where we were selling it at sold 7 times to ketchup. So for every one bottle of ketchup, you know, somebody was buying, they were buying salsa 7 times. And I said, wow, you know, that's our target audience, right? So now we know who to find. We know how much money they make. We know what ethnic culture they come from. We know where they shop at. We know how often they shop. We know what their flavor is in a sense of heat patterns. So once we collected all that data, that helped us determine where we were going to introduce the product. And so introducing it to a farmer's market was healthy in certain communities. Introducing it in certain festivals was another opportunity. Introducing it in key retailers, whether you're going big box retail chains or small kind of bodega style retailers, you know, so you got to do the research. You have to do your due diligence and know where your product's going to sell. And that's for anything. Now, that is a little different than in the business that I'm in now to some degree, because now I sell promotional products, which is more B2B. But we could talk about that later. So I'll just keep answering your questions. Go ahead.
Sure. We'll get to it for sure. But I wonder, how long does it really take to get that insight about your customer? Does it take one day, one week, or you really have to spend months sometimes to get this insight that is trustworthy, insight that you can rely on?
You know, it could be a day, it could be a week, it could be a year, right? The time that you want to put in. So there's a lot of tools out there that you can use. So in the United States, you know, we have things called the SBA, which is the Small Business Administration. We have things called the SBDC, which is Small Business Development Center. And so these spaces are kind of pseudo government private entities that we can go to help get the research that we need in that sense. But there's other programs like Nielsen Rating, which rates all the radio, television. So you can also go to Nielsen to find data. There's a ton of tools out there that can help you do research in that relationship. There's also industry research. So if you're in marketing, if you're going to sell soap, if you're selling cars, you know, that's a specific industry. And then you can look up what the sell position is and the value position is of that industry and where the potential market share and opportunities are for you to sell your product. So that can happen in a day. That can happen in years. I think you just have to make a decision how much time you're going to spend on it and what are those key indicators. What are those KPIs that are going to be important to you and get to it?
Okay. That gives me quite an initial knowledge to start the work on. That go on secondary research data, pick from there, and after that to maybe spend a few days or maybe a week getting to potential customers that secondary data suggests and know whether it is right or not, how the accuracy of that data, and then build on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a hypothesis, right? You know, everything that you're studying, all the research that you're putting in there is a hypothesis. Yes, you know, we know that based on statistics, quantitative analysis, that a product should be able to sell in a certain area. You know, that's not always the case, right? So the only way to truly know whether your research is valid or not is to put it out there in the market space. You know, once you have something that sells, then you can start defining the success of where it lands. Is it a multi-million dollar product? Is it not a multi-million dollar product? Is your product launched in an area that offers it to be a multi-million dollar product? Do you want it to be a multi-million dollar product? So once you define all that, prior to that, the research is a hypothetical. You know, the thing that's not a hypothetical, definitely if you're active, is the cost, right? There's cost to bringing a product to market. There's cost to development. There's costs to doing discovery. And so that's one of the more important thing in most of the research that you're going to do is, do you understand what the cost is to bring your product to this and put it on the shelf and to sell it, and what your return on your investment is going to be?
Okay. So that's quite some factors to think upon, because you do not know whether it will get sold or not, but you know that you will shell out money from your pocket when you launch the product.
Absolutely. Time and money, right? As soon as you decide to take that idea and put it out there in the world, you know, it's time and money.
Okay. As you mentioned, you are into promotional products now. Could you, you know, tell a bit about what promotional products really are? And how are they different from regular products, whether in B2B market or B2C market?
If I understood you right, you said, what are the difference between branding products and promotional products?
Yes.
And how do you bring them into market? Honestly, there's no difference. So it depends on who you're talking to. Let me rephrase that.
Okay.
So in many cases, a promotional product and a brand product is the same thing, right? It's what you plan to use. So I sell promotional products, products that already exist in the market, where manufacturers would make them. They're typically blank. And a company can embellish them with a logo, a slogan, some degree, some type of insignia for a variety of use. One use typically in a promotional product world is as a giveaway. You know, you ever get a gift with purchase at retail? Hey, you know, buy this shirt, get a free keychain, right? That keychain is the promotional product that is representing and pushing you to get that extra incentive to buy the shirt, right? Now, that shirt is a retail product. Here,
okay,
I'm gonna flip it. If you begin to give that t-shirt away, it becomes what? A promotional product. So a promotional product is anything that you're going to use to promote your brand, your business, or, you know, service to acquire and attract customers. So that's really what a promotional product is. And a brand product is not any different. Now, how you use them, you know, makes the determination, right? So if you take and get a bunch of stuff printed up with a logo and a name or cool graphic tees, and then you put them out in the world for retail, you know, it just became a retail product. When you start giving it away, it becomes a promotional product, right? Marketing and advertising, that's all you're doing. So in the promotional products world, what I do is I connect both B2B, B2C, and some C2C, and I'll go through that with you, to brand products that they wouldn't otherwise have access to. So I work with a variety of suppliers and factories really globally, but specifically across the US, and I help connect their product to my customer, right? And so I take them through the whole process of developing what's going to be the best product for them, how logos and or designs are going to be positioned on the product. And then, you know, we basically get them manufactured and brought in. So yeah, when you look at the B2B, B2C, there's a ton of different markets that exist out there. You know, so B2B for people who are listening is business to business, right? And so that's one business who's doing business with another business. It typically has a really long shelf life. You typically make more money or has a more revenue exchange than any of the other categories. So, you know, B2C is business to consumer. So your Kroger, well, your grocery store would be like a B2C, right? The business is selling directly to the consumer. Then there's a C2B, which is still kind of relatively new, which is consumer to business. It's like your Amazons of the, not really, your eBays of the world. And that eBay and Craigslist, they could also be considered a C2C, right? Consumer to consumer, where you have consumers exchanging services or barter or whatever in order to gain something. And then there's another one that is really big in the US, and I'm sure it's big everywhere, which is basically B2G, which is business to government. But typically, if the B on the front of it is there, it's business to business. I think really some big brainiac out of Harvard or Yale decided they want to come up with a bunch of extra acronyms so they could confuse the world on how to conduct business. But yeah, man, and they just keep growing. So there's types of retail, B2C, B2B, C2C, C2B, and B2G. Yeah, there it is. That's enough to confuse people.
Yeah, that is quite a lot of acronyms to work on, because if a person does not have really formal education in this field, it takes quite some time to get familiar with all these acronyms. And even though you don't really need these, they just are so widely used that you cannot work without these now.
Go back to your original statement in terms of market research. It's important because in that market, when you're doing that market research, you'll define, you know, where your product is best sold. To give you an example, when we were making salsa, we realized that both on the B2C, business to consumer, right? We were a retailer, wholesaler, but we could also sell direct to universities, colleges, and large corporate companies who had cafeterias in their facility, right? So now we have a B2B option. And so those are two different market strategies and maybe even business strategies that a company or a person would approach when bringing their market to the, bringing their product to market, excuse me. That part of the research is going to be important because it also tells you where the market availability is in terms of spending. You know, your B2C, so if you're thinking about consumer market in a small geographic area, might say, let's say the opportunity is $1 million market, right? If you can sell 10% of that market, it's $100,000 in sales. That could be monthly, that could be annually, you know, whatever your reach is. Rarely does anybody actually sell 100% of their market share, right? So market share, we'll get into that later. But when you look at B2B, you know, you might look at it and say, man, you know, here's a larger market share, right? This market share is worth 10 million. And now let's see if we can go after 10% of that, right? And that's going to land you $1 million just for round numbers in terms of total revenue. So that's another piece of research that you're going to look at when launching that product or in even a nutshell, launching your business.
Yeah, you know, I can kind of relate with that covering the market share as well, because it takes me back to 1997 when Bill Gates actually invested in Apple, because otherwise Bill Gates or Microsoft would be a monopoly and government does not support a monopoly.
Yes.
So. Okay. So with that, as we get back with the promotional products, what is the importance of promotional products for marketing? How important are they? How are they different from other forms of marketing in terms of cost to result ratio?
So promotional products are a little different in a variety of ways. One, so promotional products, I guess if you were to compare it to all the other different marketing and advertising categories, it's the third tier, right? It's the bottom of the totem pole. I mean, you're going to always have your traditional marketing advertising, which is television, radio, and in print, right? And then comes the promotional product. You know, so the product is the physical, tangible thing that you're giving someone in order to promote a time, space, event, service, etc. You know, where when you compare that to radio, you're doing the same thing, but it's because you're a dedicated, the radio stations, podcasters, vloggers, have a dedicated community that's coming in and chiming in and listening to him, right? And so when you're running an ad, that's stimulating what you can hear, right? Television is stimulating what you can see and hear. So when I look at how promotional products are different, promotional products is the product that you put in people's hands that stimulates their function, right? How do I use a pen? What coffee cup am I drinking from? You know, am I drinking from an Abercrombie coffee mug that I bought or they gave to me? You know, am I wearing my favorite t-shirt when I go to my favorite concert? Same thing. So, you know, the promotional product is the third tier, but you know, back, you know, prior to COVID, people were doing a lot of trade shows. They were doing industry trade front shows, you know, and one of the things that you would typically find on a table at a trade show at a business exhibit would be what? Promotional products. You're going to find pins, magnets, calendars. You're going to find, you know, right now, one of the largest promotional products, believe it or not, well, probably believe it, since 2020 has been custom made mask, right? Because everybody's wearing face coverings. And so one of the things that we started doing was locally printing on cotton based masks, companies' logos, team logos, and things like that. And now everybody's walking around with advertisement on their face and their basically their brand, so to speak. And then a lot of big brands are actually doing the same thing. So you have large insurance companies like Humana, you know, who printed up millions of masks. Wish I would have got that job. and they started giving them away to their entire market share, right? Nike's doing the same thing. And so that's how you stay present. And basically, you know, everybody's fighting over, you know, this stay at home position of who's going to use what product to keep their brand current.
But
promotional products has been around, you know, man, since probably 16, 1800s, believe it or not. Right. So we just don't think about it. You know, you think about kings and queens used to stamp a flag or a banner, or they would put a seal on something. You know, that was them promoting. That was them promoting their crest, their family, their legion. Right. So you think about promotional products in that relationship, even subscription, believe it or not. And I just learned this, you know, subscription based business in retail, because there's different forms of retail, has been around since the early 1600s or maybe late 1600s, because in the UK, they had subscription based book deliveries. So, you know, there was no television, you know, you don't even have electricity then. But there were, you know, people, how they got their books was through a subscription base, and people would drop the books off at the house and they would pay a subscription for that to happen on an ongoing basis. So, you know, it's amazing how long things that we think are brand new have just evolved. Marketing is about building relationships, regardless of product or service.
Wow. This is actually mind blowing. Subscription business is 400 years old. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. It's not new. You know, the internet is new. So all we did was take everything we was doing in real life and put it on the internet. And the internet is still a baby. We're still trying to figure that out. You know what I mean?
So true. Yeah. It's like 20, 30 years old, 40 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, you are older than the internet.
I am. So if internet is 40 years old, I'm 45. So I'm 5 years older than the internet. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And way older than Google and Facebook.
Yes, I'm older than Google. I'm older than Google and Facebook. You know, that's the benefit of young people, right? They come into a market and they have little to no experience and influence not to do a thing. And I think that's the birth of a Google. That's the birth of a Facebook. That's the birth of an Instagram and a Snapchat and a WhatsApp app. You know, they're born in technology. And so their brains, you know, Gen X, Gen Z, their brains are automatically formed to morph this industry into multimedia, into a whole new space. I was born without internet, but I was born with television and radio and outside door playing. Right. So my business is really, you know, the introduction of multimedia. Right. I manipulate television. We manipulate radio. And I understand life, you know, directs person to person relationships. And I can talk about that often because it's all I've done for most of my life. Now we're introducing technology. Even I need younger people, and I have some younger people who hang out with me, be like, yo, girl, we need to do it different. We need to stream. And I'm like, you know, think about it. You know, you used to have to go to the TV station to get on TV. Well, now you can build an audience in any social media platform and go live. Just what we're doing now, using different tools to introduce yourself to different people and to bring your product and your service to market, and even exchange money. Now think about back in the day, you only had a bank, right? You know, so if you and I wanted to do business, I'd have to write you a check and send it to you. Or I'd have to have the bank wire it, right, from your bank to the next bank. And we'd have to wait through that process. Well, now we got Cash App and PayPal, and, you know, with a bling, you know, I can just throw you money and we're winning.
Yeah, that's it's really fascinating at times that we do online transactions many times a day now. And 10 years ago, if you don't, like for me, it was like, if you don't bring cash, bro, next time.
Yeah, right. And now I can just, you know, I had a guy call me this morning, was like, hey, you know, send me your Cash App and we can pay you. And I'm like, I don't Cash App. You know, I was like, but I do have a PayPal. I said, you can PayPal me and I'll send you my PayPal me link and let's get down. So the future is about accessibility, influence, of course, because, you know, we've always had influencers. Now anybody can be an influencer. You have to understand the integrity of marketing and being an influencer. Some people are out here influencing the world and don't know that they're doing it. And some folks definitely in social media realize that, man, this is an opportunity and a business for me. And I'm going to take it serious and I'm going to have some integrity about what I'm doing. And that's that whole consumer to business relationship that we were talking about earlier. I mean, you think about influencers, I think make up 49% or assist with 49% of the sales that are happening in internet transaction. And so the influence is telling the community, this is a winning product. This is a winning person. This is a winning service. You know, yesterday it took a Shaquille O'Neal to make that happen. And now, you know, you and I can be influencers on so many levels and do the exact same thing. Whole new marketing scam. Or not scam, but playing opportunity.
I mean, it feels like a scam when you grew up in a time when the investment required was really high to establish yourself as a brand. And today the barrier has gotten so down that almost everyone can start to establish themselves as a brand, be it as a fitness influencer or as a comic or TikTok is a very good example. Anyone can just start.
Yes.
You have virtually zero barrier to entry. Like, except if you do not even have a phone, if you can't afford a phone or a data plan, then that's an exceptional case. Otherwise, you have almost no barrier to entry of creating your own brand and getting it to millions of people out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yes. The major part of branding, what I understand is, you say that this product carries my values or my brand's values. But how would you create that image of brand values that, okay, this brand carries these brand values? How would you convey that to customer? Apart from one example of promotional products, what other ways could be there?
So you're saying, how do you convey brand value to your consumer?
Yes.
So that happens through messaging. So content, right? When we write content, it's really important. So I could say something like, if I'm selling a microphone, so for example, I'm talking to you today through one of Zoom's new mics. And all I have to say is, it's not the most expensive mic in the world, but it gives you top quality sound. This is a great mic for $100. You can go into any podcasting system and understand that you're going to come out clear, concise. Your plurals, those P's, those pops, and those S's are going to be minimized. You know what I mean? This is one you got to get. So, you know, that message, when you put it out there into the world, right? When you run your advertising, that begins to talk about the integrity of the product. Now, this is how an influencer works, right? So the brand is putting out a message. Now the influencer gets the mic and does a comparison. So I'm going to compare the Zoom mic to the Rodecaster Pro, right? And then I'm going to put them side by side and I'm going to talk about the integrity and the sound that each one of these mics give off. And so the influencer then is going to dictate, in a sense, to the audience, which one is the better value at the price point. So that's one way how, one, you can use written content, two, how you can use the influencer to push the envelope. The other piece is any of the marketing pieces that you put out there. Packaging is stupid important. I use the word stupid because my wife is really, 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 really smart. And I always say she's stupid smart, basically, because she makes everybody else in the room stupid. So packaging dictates quality as well. Right. So if you send me a microphone in a package box with no styrofoam in it, it's not nicely placed, the ink rubs off the box, that's a cheap microphone and it's packaged cheaply and I'm not going to believe in it. But if you package it in a way where, you know, it's got full color graphics, wraparounds, the box on the outside is done really well, the packaging inside the box is, you know, the microphone is placed nicely, you know, it comes with a cord or your XLR, your attachment, it comes with a set of instructions, maybe even a sticker, because we know another, that's a promotional product inside the box, right? That comes with it, right? That begins to speak to the quality and the integrity of the brand and what they want you to believe and do. There are a lot of ways to promote integrity of your product. The killer part is when it comes in. So if you package it pretty, and I'm going to be honest, I've gotten really pretty things. The packaging was excellent. The product was excellent. You know, when I took it out of the box, but then I turned it on and it didn't work. That's the immediate killer. So
okay.
You know, I'm an influencer on IG on one of my IG pages. And so every so often I get some product and, you know, people say, hey, we really want you to promote this. And I'm going to tell you, if you want me to promote something and you want to know if it's going to last, send it to me because I break stuff daily. So I got a whole bunch of watches and it's one watch. Actually, the watch I'm wearing right now is from Daniel Phillips. And so I had to pay for shipping to get it in. It's a UK based thing. I thought it was a fraud. And I was like, man, you know, but let me try. I'm going to buy this one watch as everybody else other sent me the watches. Let me tell you this. I broke all the other watches except for this one. So even if it's a scam, wow, he made a quality product. or they bought a quality product. You know, in the packaging, they sent me this little beaded necklace because that's their lifestyle, right? They know that, you know, whoever's buying into this watch, not necklace, I'm sorry, bracelet, is in the bracelets, all that kind of fun stuff. The packaging was really nice. They sent you a really nice watch box with it labeled in there. And what was even more interesting is that he had a card, or this company put a card in there talking about who they are as a company and as an organization and as they are people, and they give back to their community. They feed the homeless, yada, yada, yada. And so secured his brand integrity in comparison to everybody who sent me stuff for free. And the packaging was ugly. The watches didn't look well made and they all fell apart. Yeah, I do tell. I tell on people. So you send me food that's garbage, I'm going to tell you about it.
Perfect. You know, this is the part that, okay, packaging was promising. The product was promising.
Yes.
If one thing is missing, it's a big disconnect even between what it shows and what it really is. Yes. Not just what they're saying and what it really is. I believe it breaks trust up to another level now. At this point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's kind of like personal relationships in a sense, right? In our day-to-day relationships with people, we teach people how to trust us. Okay. Everybody be like, I got trust issues. No, you don't. No one has trust issues, right? What we have is a learned lesson of how to trust the people in our sphere of influence. That's all products do, right? We're learning how to trust the things that we get and purchase, right? So we know that you could get something that has ugly packaging, but is a great product. We know that you can get pretty packaging and it's a horrible product, right? And so these brands are teaching us how to trust them. Now, what we say about them, how we use them, how we refer them, actually is the true story of whether they last. And that's another important part to think about. But it's all about relationship building. Thank you. You have a beautiful day, man.
So that was our conversation. Hope you found it helpful. Tell us your most useful learning from this episode and I will give you a free entry into our exclusive merchandise giveaway. Oh, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button and tell your friends how much you love this podcast. See you in the next episode. This was Marketing Chakraview Podcast and I am Nishant Goel signing out.